Previously on Floating Space.
They're not online friends anymore. They're the closest friends that I have.
I think it's really easy to vilify online spaces as not being real enough.
The conduit is really a quintessential third space.
I used to call this place home from home.
No one has time, no one has money.
Welcome back to Floating Space, the hunt for the third places we belong in. Sociologist Ray Oldenburg suggested everyone needs three places in their lives. A first place, their home. A second place, their workplace. And a third place, a place to gather easily, inexpensively, regularly, and pleasurably. Somewhere neutral, you can socialize, interact, and just be. This week's search has brought me to the pulsing, vibrant lights of nightclubs. Let me set the scene. It's a clear night. You've been queuing for what feels like an age, but now it's your turn. You hand your ID to the bouncer. They give you a once-over, up and down. Then, handing your card back to you between two fingers, they nod to the door. You're in. The lights are flashing, spotlighting gorgeous dancing bodies. The floor is sticking to your shoes, but you're already moving, refusing to be held down. This is going to be a special night. I have many unforgettable, if a little blurry, memories in nightclubs that I hold onto very fondly. But nightlife venues are divisive. They're the epicenter for night owls, while being torturous for the early bird. Some find them noisy and overrun, while others, well, they know how to have fun. But there's no denying nightclubs have been monumental in shaping cultural history in London.
There's a lot of clubs around London to go to. You're spoilt for choice, really.
Nightclubs as we know them today have transformed over the last 100 years. Post-World War I, fueled by optimism and growth, we enter the Roaring Twenties. Londoners gathered to feed their lust for life, most notably in the 43 Club in Soho, notorious for its law-breaking, debauchery, and growing jazz scene. Post-World War II, we arrive at the swinging 60s. We really need to bring back exciting decade names because the end of the world doesn't have a great ring to it right now. But I digress. The swinging 60s was a period driven by a richer, younger population, bringing their cultural rebellion to the clubs and using them as a petri dish to change the face of music and fashion. The 70s and 80s divided the city with its newfound counterculture, with punk, disco, reggae, and rave houses springing up. Contrast that with the 90s and 2000s, which were the international uniter of dance music, turning DJs into celebrities and turning celebrity nights out into photo shoots. Finally, we arrive at the 2010s and 2020s, with the visible decline of the nightclub scene. You mix in gentrification and the cost of living crisis, a sober youth culture with a preference for meeting online, and the blow of COVID that left hundreds of venues in permanent lockdown, and you get a pretty good picture of the state of the nightlife scene today. Rather than look at who we've lost, I wanted to see who was hanging on. Why do they continue to fight this uphill battle, and who for? Who visits these nocturnal third places today, and why do they need saving?
It's fun, it's sexy, it's warm, it's stimulating. So you're not here to do anything other than present a version of yourself that you want to present. I am John Nolan, or you might know me as John Sizzle. That's my kind of scene name. And I am a co-owner and the managing director of The Divine. This is the continuation of The Glory, effectively, which to my joy and not really surprise became a really important third place for me and became something that the people who used it created, really. I just kept the toilets working.
Before The Divine, John and his business partner, Johnny Wu, set up The Glory, a pub, LGBTQ plus performance venue and club not too far from where The Divine sits now on Kingsland Road in East London. They weren't ousted, but instead chose to move and bring the drag nights, club nights and a host of celebrities like Cara Delevingne, Keira Knightley and Bimini Bombulash, who graced the halls of The Glory with them.
The ethos is still exactly the same. It's got an open door policy for creatives and artists to come and express themselves and put on the show.
Do you think that's important as well for identity formation, and especially with a new generation of people constantly coming through the door?
It's, I mean, It's a place where you come as an not fully formed adult. You tend to be quite young, a bit shy maybe, or, you know, you're fresh to London especially, or fresh to the area. So places like this are places where you can build your confidence. You can learn the ways of the world. You can mix with different generations, people with different viewpoints to you, different, you know, sexualities, genders. It's just a real melting pot and a place for you to sort of grow into a young adult, basically, and then go forth as a confident queer and conquer the world. That's the main thing that I always say when people ask me about the importance of safe spaces, is, and queer spaces particularly. That is why there is a need for the very few that exist to actually be supported, not only by the local community, but if the government and local council can help at all, that would be really nice.
So you do community events here, obviously, that is your...
Always, yes. I raise on Detra in order to keep this ticking over. Financially, you need to book it. It needs to be full. So yeah, the key to this is to have like 7 events a week plus 2 nightclubs. It's employment as well. So we've got lots of things that happen during the day that people don't know about. Puppet workshops going on, shadow puppetry. I've got a South Asian immigrants get together kind of event coming on. So the place is used as a rehearsal space for people like learning to DJ. Some people come in and use the stage to learn some dance routines. So it's got a real sort of open door policy for things like that that don't cost anything, and people just get to use the space while it's empty, yeah. Right?
With all of these pretty heartbreaking venue closures, and I suppose, I don't know, I suppose, do you have any hopes for like the future or of venue closures and what the direction that it's going?
I don't. I think it's a London trajectory of, it's a downhill trajectory. Thinking outside of the queer world, and you're looking at just bar closures in general and pub closures, people used to use bars because they were bored at home, literally. And also you didn't have any devices to entertain you. You didn't have Netflix. There's no reason to leave the house. It's really about creating venues that people want to go to because they can't get what they can get here from a screen, you know? And that's a battle, because people are obsessed. They've been hypnotized by the screen. It's too easy. It's too easy, isn't it? So I think maybe what will happen is that it will have to level out. Things can't keep closing. It's the ones that are kind of the smaller, cute little cozy corner ones are going to go.
It's worth bearing in mind that John has decades of experience navigating the club scene through its good and bad times. Smaller clubs may not have the support network or knowledge to steer them through rough waters. How do they keep their dreams alive? Is it even worth the struggle?
Hello, I am Lucia, one of the founders of Donya, a musical mezcal bar here in Stoke Newington, London. And the things that kind of underpinned the space when we opened were independent creativity and empowered feminine energy. So those were our two like touchstone points, and that very much informed everything about the space, from the art on the walls to the drinks that we sell to the events that we hold, to the whole spirit of the place is kind of underpinned by those two brand pillars.
What are your predictions for kind of venues in the future? If not this year, then the next 5.
I feel very, very concerned. I feel like the pressure of running a bricks and mortar business would have been so much harder if I didn't have the support network that I've had. And that's crazy, because actually, when you think about the high street, like there should be a whole ecosystem of little businesses that people are running. Like, it's a great thing, you know, for one or two people. You open a little business, you work in it every day, and that's how you live. Like, that makes so much sense. But instead, businesses are closing. I mean, at the moment, every time I come here, I see another shop that's shut. I think that government could do a lot more to support small businesses and the ecosystem that they provide, because it's not just like a ecosystem from an economic perspective, but it's also, there's a really important social function to businesses being run by people who live in those places. You know, it's like the Costas and the Pretts, and you know, they provide us a service, sure, and they provide jobs, great, but like, they've decimated the reality of, you know, someone opening their own little cafe. And I think that's really sad because I think we're going to lose so much character. And in the loss of experience, there's so much inspiration that will be lost. There's so much connection that will be lost. So I think it's like a very scary time for nightlife. And I feel like the closure of so many venues is an inevitability of the lack of support that we experience.
What is it about the night that kind of draws people in and also facilitates and creates those opportunities?
I think there's a lot of freedom in the dark. I think like historically you look at nightlife and that's where a lot of subversive movements began. It's where a lot of marginalized communities congregate. You know, I think there's just, it's a really great way of accessing community and accessing solidarity.
For you, what are the pillars of community?
When you're in a space like Donya, you've all come here, you've made a choice. And in that choice, you're sort of engaging on a level and you're in the space together. And, you know, when Donya's kind of like popping off, it's like it's one organism. I think that's what community is. And so that's why these spaces are really important, because you might be really alone in a city. You might not know lots of people, but you could come to a show, even if you're on your J's. But if you watch the show and you enjoy it, you're going to feel less alone, you know, and feel and be reminded that there are people out there. And obviously on top of that, you might meet people, you might chat, you might have some exchanges, you might come away with a friend or a lover. But before even just the one-to-one connections, you're just in a space with other people doing the same thing. That's kind of, in my mind, community. We're not designed to be alone. Life is so much better experienced together.
In the historical rundown at the beginning of this episode, I missed out one key thing, that club culture has been driven by and a safe haven for queer and minority communities around the world, not just London. The New York drag ballroom scene was a space for Black and Latino trans and queer folks to freely express their identities and sexualities while satirizing gender and class constructs, a haven of acceptance for those rejected by mainstream society. In the 80s, rave culture in London and Manchester brought together and supported protesters against Section 88, a conservative bill prohibiting the acceptance and promotion of homosexuality and LGBTQ families. Today, you can support and protect trans-owned, trans-run clubs like The Way Out or Zodiac in solidarity with the thousands of trans folks who are having their rights and lives threatened right now. Community starts with accepting the people around you as they are, just as you hope others will accept you. And that doesn't start at your local pret. It starts at the local cafe, opened as a couple's lifelong dream, your local seamstress creating costumes for performers to shine in, and your local club that spotlights its stars and celebrates you being yourself. So let's look at the checklist. Can you gather easily? Yes, the doors are open for everyone. Regularly, if your circadian rhythm allows. But also remember, these clubs may have day community events too. Pleasurably, 100%. Inexpensively, I wouldn't say so. Running a club has expenses and they rely on their patrons spending money in-house. So take that as you will. Somewhere neutral, you can socialize, interact, and just be. Yes, yes, 1000% yes. This week really hammered home that community means thinking beyond ourselves. Even if you don't frequent nightclubs, if you believe people deserve a space to be free and not harassed for being themselves, have a look at your local area and see how you can support these spaces in the day. If you believe people should be able to start a business and live off it, write to your MP. Tell them that you want them to support small local businesses, for that to be a priority agenda for the constituency and the government at large. And the most obvious thing, go have fun. Go on a night out, support these places, buy a drink, meet new people, experience the lights. For now, it's on to the next, and I hope you'll join me through Floating Space. Next time on Floating Space.
It's so important in a city like London to have wide open green spaces that's easily accessible.
So, do I find my third place? A big thank you to all the contributors to this episode. Floating Space is hosted and produced by me, Katie Stokes. Artwork by Allegra Lockstadt. This podcast is powered by Transmission Roundhouse. You can follow us on social media at Floating Space Podcast.